Well, it's good to be back. I've been gone for a few weeks, and it'd be good to open your Bibles, please, to Romans chapter 3. So welcome to Redemption. If this is your first time, glad you're with us, and if you've been here a long time, we're glad you're still with us this morning. And welcome back to the book of Romans. We've been out of the book of Romans for a long time, but we're jumping back in over the next, through early January. We're going to be looking at chapters, the end of chapter 3, chapter 4, and chapter 5. And if you're just joining us this morning and didn't bring a Bible or don't have it on your phone, there should be one in front of you, in the seat in front of you. It'll be on page 941 this morning, 941. And I didn't get to share my story, but I'm just going to ask for a quick prayer. Our missional community is starting to partner more with a ministry in Virginia Beach called PIN, People in Need. And over the last 8 months or so, we've been able to get in and serve with them and get to know the program director. And I actually got to teach a class. They have like a life training class to help people get jobs. And I went in there and did some teaching and built some relationship with these people. And we're going to, as a group, we're going to be this Wednesday night beginning to meet with these people in that class. And God really, I don't know why, gave me great favor with these people. They all were like, we want to come to your church. And I told all of them, you're not coming. Isn't that a good pastor, right? But you can come meet my people, or we're going to come meet you. And so I would just pray that, ask for prayer for you that as we do that this Wednesday and continue to build relationships with these people, that the good news of the kingdom will break in. Romans chapter 3, verses 27 through 31. This is going to be very awkward. Is my mom here? Are you still reading? Nate forgot you. You just texted her. Well, she prepared. Mom, why don't you come on up and read? Yeah. This is my mom. This is Nate's fault. Just remember that.
I think it was an act of God.
An act of God? Oh, that I remembered?
Okay, so we're... No.
I know.
Okay, I'm going to be reading Romans 3, 27 through 31. In the ESV. Then what becomes of our boasting? It is excluded. By what kind of law? By a law of works? No, but by the law of faith. For we hold that one is justified by faith apart from works of the law. Or is God the God of the Jews only? Is he not the God of the Gentiles also? Yes, of Gentiles also, since God is one. Who will justify the circumcised by faith and the uncircumcised through faith? Do we then overthrow the law by this faith? By no means. On the contrary, we uphold the law.
All right. Thank you, Mom. In that particular passage and moving down into the chapter 4, there's going to be one key word that we are going to zero in on over the next 3 months together, and that is the word justification. Justification. The dictionary definition of justification is this. It's the action of showing something to be right. It's the activity of proving that something is correct. And this is a word probably not used in your vocabulary this week. Anyone say the word justification apart from talking biblically? Really? Sweet. All three of you. That's amazing. I didn't. All right. The only time I use this word justification is when I'm reading some theological book or in a theological discussion. So it's not a word, I think, that is very prevalent in our society. But what I want you to know deeply is even though it's not a part of our regular vocabulary, the activity of proving something to be right is always with us. It is deep-seated within us. Self-justification is what I'm talking about here this morning. We are at all times humans who are trying to justify our very existence. Self-justification is the act of proving our lives to be right. It is the activity of showing to ourselves, to others, and to God that our lives actually have meaning, they have value, and they have significance. So I don't know what that is for you. We'll maybe dig into that a little bit deeper as we talk through this. But inherent in all of us, because we know that we're so jacked up that we need something to validate us. We need some belief system. We need some activity. We need some person to give us some sort of meaning and purpose. Because if you didn't have any of that, you'd go through all of your life without meaning and purpose, and that drives all of us insane. And the reason that drives all of us insane is because God made us to find meaning, to find significance. And the problem is, as we'll see, is that what sin has done is it's made us go to everything else but Him for that meaning and that significance. And every time we move to something other than the good news of Jesus for that, it is self-justification. So I could say at one level, our whole lives, apart from the good news of Jesus, apart from the gospel, is nothing more than an act of justification. It's nothing more than an act of trying to validate who we are. So what do we do? What do we do? You, at all times, will look to someone or something to give you purpose. It's a way to ensure your place of safety. It's a way to ensure your preservation of your very existence. Let's just dive right in. Okay, let's take politics, for example. Why is our culture seemingly more divided than ever over two colors of the rainbow? Why is the political arenas of our culture a hot mess at the moment? Anyone know that? Okay. And I'm sure every one of you in this room, every one of you, even the teens all the way down to the kids, could give better reasons than I could give to you why our culture is in a hot mess. Like, I don't know all the specific issues. I'm not a very political person when it comes to that type of thing. But what I do know is that in this arena, it is a very hot topic, a very hot ideal going on in our culture right now. And underneath all of it, regardless of what the surface issues are that we fight about, underneath every one of those issues that is dividing us is our inherent need as humanity, to justify ourselves, to be right, to be in the right. And don't hear me saying that these issues up here are unnecessary or unimportant, please. I think as a church, our politics should be the kingdom of God, and whether that's blue or red, I don't care. In our politics, we need to be fighting for those issues. But do hear me saying that underneath all of the division, underneath all of the red and the hot separation, red and hot, did I say that? Red and blue separation is this need for self-justification. We derive our meaning from the perspective of our belief system. What I mean by that is, like, you derive your value and significance because you are red, or you derive your value and significance because you are blue. And when this happens, when we get so excited about something, and I'm just taking politics as an example, and we derive our meaning and significance from it, what ends up happening is it doesn't allow us to see things clearly. And so here's a secular author who has written a little article in a book on self-justification. I think I have it on the screen for your quote. This is from a secular author, not even a Christian. This secular author says this: self-justification is like quicksand. Can draw us deeper into disaster. It blocks our ability to see our errors, let alone correct them. It distorts reality, keeping us from getting all the information we need and assessing issues clearly, and so it prolongs and widens rifts between lovers, friends, and nations. What is a particular person saying? You ever talk to someone, and like you just lay out such clear evidence that something is right, and they're like, forget it. They won't believe you. You ever done that? Like, anyone done that with your spouse before? Like, you're just like, this is so clear. Okay, or you and a friend watch the same events. You're at the same game. And at the end of the game, you talk about the game, and this person says, this is what happened in the game. You're like, what game were you watching? Right? And I'm like, you didn't even see what's going on. Why? It's because we have these ideas. We have these ways that we view the world. And when they become so strong and so prevalent, the way we view the world is how we justify our very existence, it does not allow us to actually hear what other people are saying. This happens in relationships, this happens with you and God, and this happens as a culture. And so none of us are purely objective in the way we view the world. I mean, we all wear a certain color glasses by which we view the world, but when we are so excited about something that gives us meaning, it robs us of the ability to actually hear people, to actually see where we could be wrong. So I'd ask this: if you're of the red viewpoint, you're of the red stripe, why do you only watch Fox News? And if you're of the blue stripe, I think that's MSNBC, right? I mean, if I'm wrong, just smile and wave, okay? CNN? Great, there we go. Okay? My point is like, probably whatever viewpoint you are, you only watch that particular network, correct? I mean, is that true? I mean, there might be some divergence out there, if you will, but for the most part, we're just that way. And what is ironic right now is you might actually be doing some self-justification in your mind as to why you only watch one station. Did you catch that? The irony of what's actually happening in your own mind of how you're constantly trying to justify why you only watch one? And so what happens is that all of this is just such irony that when you become so fixated on a belief system like a politic issue or something, that it robs you the ability to actually see what is really happening. It robs you the ability to see clearly what is happening in God's world specifically. And what we're going to see is that this self-justification is damning to ourselves and our society. It causes divisions, it causes disunity among people who are always trying to prove their existence on what they believe and what they do. And politics, obviously, is not the only thing that we justify our existence upon. We justify our existence based on our appearance, what we look like. We justify our existence based on who we know. We justify our existence on being a mom or a dad. We justify our existence on our job. There's so many different things that we actually justify our existence upon. But what we see is when people begin to attack this, when people begin to attack what we build our life on, there are only two responses that I can think of. And I would ask this question: how do you know what you build your life on? How do you know what you justify your existence on? Ask yourself this question: what do you become critical of, and when do you get defensive? Because critical and defensive spirits are nothing more than masked forms of self-justification or self-righteousness. Did you catch that? Critical spirits and defensive spirits are nothing more than masks that actually reveal what you justify your life on. So that if people begin to attack a political viewpoint, let's go into my world, people begin to attack a theological viewpoint, and I become critical, what does that reveal about me? I'm a pastor and it's theology, so I get to hide in the world that it's okay. But what it is just I'm building my life not on the good news of Jesus, but on a theological construct or a system. And it becomes my existence. I prove my existence on I'm a Calvinist or I'm a millennialist or I'm this. Whatever you want to say. And so the other aspect is not only do you go out and be critical of people, but when people attack you, you become real defensive. What do you become defensive about? If people begin to attack your parenting. Anyone ever done that before? I'm like, parenting is like one of the ways I built my life on being, that's like my justification. If everyone just parent the way I did, the world would be a lot better. Right? I mean, if they would just follow my strategies and my programs and my activities, this place would be a whole lot better. And so I become very critical of other people and other parents and how they raise their kids. And if they would attack what I do, I'm like, dude, like, do you see what your kid's doing? He's a hot mess. And so what we begin to see is that at all times, we're always trying to base our existence on something to give us meaning and value. And when all of that comes to us, we become very critical, defensive people. And can you see when you become very critical and defensive people, does that lead to more and more unity or more and more division? It's not that we can disagree over things. Does that make sense? We can definitely disagree. But if it leads to division in our relationship or our love for one another, that's what self-justification does. That is what sin, in essence, is. It is a separation from God and ourselves and from others. And so this justification is when we become defensive and critical. It actually leads to disunity. And so it's damning. It's destroying. And I don't want to just be these people that are saying it's out there. I want to say that the self-justification of the people in Redemption Church is actually splitting us. It's actually dividing us. If we're going to build our life on something and find our meaning and value in anything other than the good news of Jesus. See, self-justification always leads to division, and the justification that we talk about in Romans chapter 3 always leads to love. So the only antidote to self-destroying justification, self-justification, is the gospel of free grace. Look in Romans chapter 3, verse 28. Paul says this, "We hold that one is justified by faith apart from the works of the law." Let me just quickly run through Romans 3, 27 through 31, and then then dig in a little bit more into verse 28. See, in Paul's day, the Jewish context which he was writing into, that opening statement says, what about our boasting? He's actually saying, as a Jewish people, we boast. As a Jewish people, we think we're the special, privileged people of God. He gave us the law. He gave us all of these privileges, and we're boasting about it. And Paul says, what about that boasting? He says it's excluded. You have to stop boasting in who you are as a people. And the reason you need to stop boasting is because what makes you great and what makes you special is not the fact that you have a law code that you obey. What makes people special and significant in the sight of God is not by doing the works of the law, but by what? Faith. And Paul says, you know, if you just think about this for a minute, Jewish people, it would make a whole lot of sense. God is one, and so he wants one people. And if you could only be justified by doing the works of the law, what about all the other people in the world who don't even have the law? Are they, like, hopeless? What Paul is actually saying is no, they have lots of hope, because your justification, your rightness, your meaning and significance in life is not derived from what you do. It's derived from belief. And so they cannot boast because they have this special law code, but what they can boast about is that they believe that God has given them belief. And so let's dig into a little bit more into what this justification, verse 28, is talking about. If this is really what's true of the Jewish people and it actually speaks into who we are as people today, let's talk about justification for a moment. Number one, the first thing I want to see from this passage and from the word justification is this, that justification is a declaration of being in the right. It is not a process of being in the right. Justification does not make a change in your inherent character. Okay, I don't know if this is when you became a Christian, but if you were struggling with a sin, you became a Christian, guess what happened probably right after you became a Christian? You still struggled with it, right? Because why? Justification is a declarative act. God is speaking over you something. He is not asking you to go through a process to actually earn your rightness. The imagery of justification in the Bible is like one of a law courts, where God is acting as the judge, where he is standing up, you know, as the judge of the courtroom, and we are on trial. The whole world is on trial before him. And we stand before him guilty. And we are, in a sense, on this trial in which God's story simply says this, from the beginning of the world, God has wanted to dwell with you. He's wanted his love and his life to flood the world. He wanted to actually come and inhabit this world and be with us so that we could actually have meaning and significance derived from his love and his life. And yet this plan for our significance and meaning to be found in the dwelling in the presence of God, this plan was ruined when we decided to self-justify our own existence. When we began to say, as Adam and Eve did in the garden, here's where my meaning is found. It's found in I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to determine what is right and wrong. And so we turned our hearts from trusting in the presence of God to our own plans. And so God's plan after this rebellion was interesting. It was to use his own people to bring about his purposes for the world. God says, I'm going to bring a people in this world who are going to actually promote and bring back my presence to this world so that people can actually find their meaning and significance in me yet again. And so what you see through the story of God, through the story of Israel, is that as hard as they try, or didn't try most of the time, could God's people actually restore the presence of God and restore the love and life of God to this world? We see, no, that it couldn't. And so this world still stood completely condemned before this holy God. But at the right time, at the fullness of time, God sent Jesus into the world, born of a woman, born under the law to redeem those who were under the power of sin so that we might be brought back into God's family. And as part of God's new family, we possess a change in our status. This is where we're going back to. It's a declaration of being in the right. Justification is a statement that God is speaking over you a new status. Not necessarily that you have a new life and your life is completely transformed and you're perfect, but that you went from someone who was outside the family, who was not valued, who was not loved, to someone who is now brought into the family of God. And you know this through adoption. And we've had several families in our church who could speak way more to this than I could. That when you bring someone into your family and you say that you are now part of my family, does that inherently change who they are? No, but it gives them a brand new status, a brand new identity that says you belong to this family. And this is what God is actually doing to you and to me. He is actually saying to you that you can be declared to be in the right and I can speak over you a new status. And your new status is one of son. Your new status is one of daughter. Your new status as son and daughter means everything. In fact, I would say that one of the most difficult things to believe in the Christian life is your new status. It is difficult to believe that you could actually know your heart, know how evil you are, know how corrupt you are, and for God to actually speak over you and say, "You're my son. You're my daughter." And the reason is because we're Americans, and we want to be people who have a part in what we earn, what we deserve. In many ways, I would say it this way, we have a deep-seated debtor's ethic. You know what the debtor's ethic is? You did something for me, now I need to do what? Pay you back. I mean, even in everyday relationships, it's hard to receive something without like, oh, you invited me over for dinner, and guess what I have to do now? Have you over for dinner. We can't just receive anything. We can't just believe in grace as humans. It's this constant fight to believe that you didn't do anything. God just spoke over you and said, "You're my daughter and my son, and I'm going to treat you like a daughter and a son." You're not going to earn your way into this family. You've been invited into this family. And so we're not in the process of paying God back to be in the right. We're not in a process of showing God how great we are so that he would actually speak over us and say, "You are now part of my family." God is saying to you, "I am declaring you to be in the right. I'm declaring you to be part of my family." If we could ever hold on to the truth that we're declared to be in the right because God has spoken over us in Jesus, it would radically change us. Justification is a declaration. It's a spoken word that the God of the universe, the judge in the courtroom, is looking at his people, and he's saying to his people, "You are free. Your status has been completely changed. You're part of my family." It would mean, for one thing, that all of our obedience is not to get God to like us again. It would mean that all of our obedience is not to get God in our debt so that he begins to owe us. Like inherent, if I could dig into that a little bit deeper, inherent in all of us is like we think we're at a -5 with God, and so what do we have to do? We have to do all these things to get to what? A 0. And then when you finally get to a 0 and you start doing things to get to a +5, then you say to God what? "Bring your blessings." And what we see in Romans chapter 3 in this idea of justification is that you're declared to be in the right when you're a -5, and you're declared to be in the right when you're a +5. You're declared to be in the right at all times, at all places, regardless of your activity, regardless of the process that you're in, because God has spoken over you, "You are my daughter, you're my son." So justification is not a process we undergo. It's the status that we've been granted. Number two, justification is the future acquittal brought to us in the present. As humans, part of our self-justification is the need to be validated by what we do. If there is no one who ever watched what we did and gave us validation, then our lives would become worthless. In other words, we want someone to always approve of us. We're always living in light of hoping that someone will notice that we're doing something. If you get done with your whole life and there's no one who judges you for what your life was, it was good or bad, there's no one sitting at the bench, there's no judge to actually give you a verdict, then we're going to begin to wonder why we ever did what we ever did. Our life achievements only ultimately mean something if there is someone who gives us rewards and validation, right? I mean, you just think of your own life if you were to honestly think of it. Aren't there people that you're always trying to impress? Aren't there people you're always trying to get validation from? Because that's inherent in who we are as humans, because we know that at the end of the day, we're going to stand before a holy God who is going to actually be that final and ultimate judge. So inherent within each of us is this deep-seated belief that we're going to stand before our Maker, or as the great theologians Mumford and Sons tells us, we were all made to meet our Maker. It's one of the craziest moments of my life. I was with my wife when we had a Mumford and Sons concert, and there's 10,000 people, and they're basically all drunk, screaming, "We were made to meet our Maker." It's a very, very surreal experience. And so even Mumford and Sons will tell you that there is this coming day that we were made to meet him on the last day, where we await our verdict. And on that last day, we'll either be ushered into the new creation, where God's love and life will actually dwell and be present with us, where meaning and significance will be found in him with each other, or we'll be cast out into the outer darkness of being separated from God forever. And what is beautiful about the doctrine of justification is this, is that it teaches us that we can know in advance what the verdict is going to be. Justification, in the Jewish understanding, was something you waited for on the last day. Doesn't that make sense? Like, you're going to complete a whole process before you get what? Judged, right? I mean, that's just not like the Christian life. That's like if your boss gives you a project to do, he's not judging you halfway through your project, is he? Okay, he's probably judging you when? When you get it all done. If you're a teenager, you're here in school and you get your homework. Your teacher's not asking you, what'd you do halfway through? Your teacher wants your whole thing before they're going to do what? Judge you. This is what it means, and we think about when we think about judgment and having a verdict. And what justification actually teaches us is that final verdict, when we stand before God, you don't have to sit here and wonder what it's going to be. That justification, that declaration of being in the right that will be at the last day, can be known and be granted to you in the very presence. It teaches us that we don't have to be in limbo regarding our status before the God of the universe. Justification is the declaration, the statement, the verdict that the last day has already been spoken over you. It's the belief that you know that right now you are in the right. It's a belief that you're in the family of God. And this is utterly amazing. He treats you this way right now. He treats you to be in the right now. You ever heard the phrase, maybe you've been in church, you grew up a little bit in the church, it says justification is, how do you define it? It's just as if I've never sinned. You heard that before? It's like a justification, just as if I've never sinned. And I believe that's absolutely true. But that's like the negative side of the coin, that you've never done anything. There's a positive side of the coin that says this. Justification, God treats you and views you, not just as you've never sinned, but as you have always obeyed. I don't know if you caught that distinction, but it's huge. If I could use my number scale again, like we're a -5, and God treats me as I've never sinned, gets me to where? A 0. But when you begin to believe deeply that God treats you as if you have always obeyed, that moves you to a +5. That means God is always for you. He's always in favor of you. He's always doing things to love you. Your justification and your declaration of being in the right is not dependent on your status, your activity of the day, how much you obeyed or how little you obeyed. Your justification has been spoken over you by the God of the universe. It's a future end time reality. We're going to stand one day before the Almighty God of the universe. And He's actually saying to you, you can know right now that you are in the right. And that is how I view you. That is how I see you. Justification is not only a process, and not a process we undergo, it's a declaration. It's not only the future and the present. But number three, justification is received by faith alone from first to last. The way we can hear God speak over us a verdict of being in the right, and the way we're able to experience the God of the universe rejoicing over us, is only by faith. Like, how do we actually receive this declaration? How do we actually receive this Father who always is for us, who is always loving us? How do we receive to always be in the right? And Paul says in Romans chapter 3, and you'll see it throughout Romans chapter 4, the only way you're going to receive this type of justification is by faith alone, not by works. See, Paul says there's two laws at work. There's the law of works and the law of faith. And they're actually contrary to one another. They oppose one another. The law of works is saying you try to justify your own existence by what you do, what you believe, and in the Jewish context is by obeying 613 rules. In the American context, there's all different ways that we try to justify our very existence, and that is the law of works. And when you go down that road, do you know how tiring that is to you? How many of you are just not just physically tired, but emotionally tired, psychologically tired? Most of the time, it's because we have to constantly justify our existence and it just drains us. You become enslaved to that ideology. You become enslaved to that person. You become enslaved to your job. And yet the gospel of free grace actually does the opposite. It actually is freeing. You can just, like, you can take a deep breath and say, God loves me and values me as a son and a daughter. Now, for some, that's kind of scary, right? That God loves me no matter what I do, so I can just go sin. You ever heard this before? Like, He just so infinitely values me and loves me, He doesn't really care what I do, so I'm just going to go be the younger brother. And what I actually want to say is if that's how you view God, you really haven't experienced grace. Because grace doesn't lead you to more and more sin. Grace actually leads you to loving Jesus even more. What grace actually says is this, is that when you run away from Him and you're doing everything possible to stay away from Him, and I want you to know that one of the easiest ways to stay away from God is not by being very, very bad, but by being very, very good. Whatever you do to run away from God, He is actually telling you, you're my son and my daughter. And when that belief system begins to move in your heart, when you begin to value this new status that's been given to you, when you begin to value that at the end of time, before the new creation is here, you're going to be acquitted, and you can know that right now because of Jesus, it changes you. It doesn't lead you to more and more sin. It actually leads you to more and more righteousness. So the law of works and the law of faith are contrary to one another. But one of the things we're also going to see throughout Romans chapter 3 and 4 is simply this, is that the law of works must be constantly guarded against. For even though we know that we cannot be saved by our works, because I don't know where you grew up, but most of us that I know in this room grew up Protestant, that says we're saved by grace alone, through faith alone, not by works alone, by works. You've heard this before? And so we know that's how we enter into the Christian life, is by believing and not by doing. But what ends up happening is that after we become Christians, we move into a very different system. We move into the law of works. The way you please God after you become a Christian is by doing stuff. The way you become a better Christian is by doing all these disciplines of like all these things to prove that you're a better Christian. And what we're going to see throughout this series is that justification is not just for how you, your faith, is not just become how you become a Christian, but it's actually how you grow as a Christian. One particular author says this, I'd say it to you, but when someone wrote it, it makes it sound better. He says, my observation of Christians is that they tend to base their relationship with God on their performance instead of on his grace. In this sense, we live by works rather than by grace. We're saved by grace, but we're living by the sweat of our own performance. I don't know if you find yourselves there, but I think all too often we find ourselves living by the sweat of our own performance, trying to prove to God how good we are. And justification, being declared in the right, can only be received and experienced by faith. When you start and join into the Christian faith, and as you grow in your Christian faith, as you journey with God's people in your Christian faith, the way we experience being in the right is always by faith. So think of it this way. In Romans chapter 14 and 15, we'll get there in like 14 years. I'm just giving you a clue, a little heads up. Romans chapter 14 and 15, the church at Rome is having a lot of struggle. There's a lot of disunity. You know what there is? There's red and blue. There's red, who are the strong, and blue, who are the weak. And if you're a Republican and I said you're strong, don't. That's not what I meant, okay? Just relax. I was just using an example. Let's use different colors. Let's use orange and yellow. Yeah, okay. My point is that there's this disunion. There's these two groups of people, and they can't get along. The strong have freedom to eat certain things, to go to certain movies, to watch, to listen to certain music. And then you have the weak whose conscience are constrained. And they can't just eat whatever they want. And they can't just listen to whatever they want. And so what's happening is that these two groups of people are like fighting with one another. And so how does Paul eventually, when we get there, how does Paul lay the groundwork of how these two people should actually live together? Well, I think it's very easy in the Christian world to derive your rightness from being strong. Who are you? I'm a strong Christian. I can do whatever I want. I can listen to that. I can drink this. I can do that. And that becomes your identity. So that when other people, the weak, begin to attack, well, you're drinking that and you're a huge sinner. How many become defensive and critical of those people? And then when they actually become defensive and speak into you, what does the strong do to the weak? They begin to build their rightness of their life, and they base their justification on their belief system, they begin to attack the weak. Do you see how this works? And it's all because they've taken something that's a good thing and made it become an ultimate thing that which they derive their meaning and their value from, and actually is destroying the church at Rome. And so Paul says the antidote to actually not having red and blue and orange and yellow is to actually go back to justification. Where do you derive your rightness? Where do you derive your meaning? Romans 3 says we derive our meaning from the very fact that God loved us in Jesus. And he is our rightness. He is our righteousness. He is our value. He is our meaning. He is our significance. Everything that is wrapped up in Jesus, we've been wrapped up into. And so if we would, as Christians, find our justification, our rightness, in the good news of Jesus, you see how that could lead to unity, even when there's disagreements? You see how we could actually be a light in our community by not being angry at people who disagree with us? See, justification isn't just this neat doctrine that God speaks over us a new status that we can know in the future and the present. It is actually a very real experiential doctrine that shapes and changes us as a people. And so we're praying that over the next few months as we study Romans 4 and 5 and speak of this justification over and over again, that God would help us to experience our new status. Experience the beauty of Jesus. So that you and I as a group of people can learn to live our lives together in unity even when there is disagreements. So as we go out into the world to show the world this unity, when there is actually many different ways of looking at life, we can show them a unity that will actually help them to believe the good news of Jesus. So Jesus, we thank you for a few minutes to think through justification this morning, and I would just ask that you would, Spirit, that you would meet us where we're at. That you would help us over the next few months, even this morning, to experience that our rightness is not derived in anything other than Jesus. And so I pray that you grant us forgiveness of where we are critical and defensive. Maybe there are people in this room, people in our own missional communities who we need to speak to. I pray that you give us boldness to do that. And God, guard us against these critical and defensive spirits. Spirit, create, continue to preserve the unity that we have. Help us to love one another, all because we're justified by faith. That our rightness only is derived from Jesus. And so we pray that you'd use our lives as we seek to live this out for the sake of your mission. And we ask these things in the name of our King. Amen.